This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Now, Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome. Well, we've already talked to both opposition party leaders in Ontario, and they've been here to answer your questions as we head towards the new year and an election year. Well, today we hear from Premier Kathleen Wynne, who is already polishing some new promises in an effort to win your votes. She did not make the time to take your calls, but I did get about 15 minutes with her yesterday, and I hope I asked about the things that are on your mind. We have two strategists with a liberal bent joining us afterwards to give us their take and to answer your questions. So here are the numbers, 416-360-0740, toll free 1-866-740-4740. And first, as promised, here is my interview with Premier Kathleen Wynne. First of all, I'll give you a little bit of a chance to crow. As we head into the next election, what do you think your most important accomplishment this year is, or the most important thing for the coming year?
Well, I think that everyone's going to see some big changes on January 1st. I'm really proud of the plan that we're continuing to implement, and the next things that are going to happen is that on January 1st, people who are earning minimum wage will see their wages go from $11.60 an hour to $14 an hour, and families with kids who have to buy a prescription medication will be able to get that free when they go into a pharmacy. So kids from birth until their 25th birthday will see a free medication. So all of that, Libby, is part of what I believe government exists to do, which is to make our society fairer and to, you know, to support people who are not benefiting from the economic growth that we are seeing in the province. Ontario is doing very well, and I'm very proud of that, but I'm also acutely aware that there are people who are not sharing in that economic prosperity.
What will the ballot question be, do you think?
You know, I don't know. I mean, I think we're still a few months out. I think it's hard to tell, but I would say that the biggest challenge facing Ontario, and I would say beyond Ontario, North America, the Western world, is what is work going to look like? You know, what are the jobs going to be, and how are we going to be able to continue to create jobs and draw jobs to our jurisdictions? Part of that is because we're competing in a global economy, but part of it is also because we're looking at huge changes in technology and advanced manufacturing that mean that there are people who are displaced from jobs that they may have had for some time. And need to be retrained. So I think that question is huge. Whether it'll be the ballot question or not, we're going to have to wait till closer to the date to determine that.
Last few weeks have been full of confirmation of the crisis in our hospitals, the alarming increase in hallway medicine. Now, you've denounced some measures, you know, 1,200 temporary beds, some extra funding. But these are temporary. The funding goes to the end of March. And it's not just an issue for patients, but you have to hire staff for 3 months. How is this going to help the crisis that we're in?
Well, I mean, part of what we're dealing with is seasonal, but part of it is not. And so I think what we need to do is we need to, as we put those extra beds in place, we need to monitor as we go through the next few months and determine whether there is more that we need to do, whether there are some of those that need to be permanent. You know, we are building new hospitals. We are building new beds around the province in various parts of the province. So there are medium to longer term solutions that we're putting in place. But I think we need to monitor, and the Minister of Health and I have talked about this, whether these temporary beds are, you know, whether we need to look at those as a more permanent solution. I just don't think the determination has been made yet, Libby, and we'll be watching that very carefully.
Part of this problem is what they call alternative level of care. There are people who do not need to be in the hospital anymore, but they have nowhere to go. Again, you have committed 5,000 new long-term
right.
care beds in 4 years, but there are 32,000 people on the waiting list.
Yes, and so on top of the long-term care, you're right, because we've committed to 5,000 beds and then we've committed 30,000 beds over the next 10 years, but that's in addition to increases in home care and other supports, and also other solutions like transitional beds, because I believe firmly that there's a continuum that we need to be looking at. You know, it's not just ALC or long-term care. There are steps along the way that we need to be looking at, and so there are some transitional solutions that are being put in place, and I think that will ease some of the congestion in hospitals with large ALC populations as well.
Now, you're talking about an extra investment in home care, federal government the same, but when I talk to people who actually deliver the home care, their budgets have not increased. And when I talk to a lot of people who are actually supposed to receive the home care, not only is it, you know, their allotted hours not enough, but they don't even actually get what they're supposed to get.
Well, one of the things that we are that we're looking at doing is letting people manage their own care. So, in terms of instead of the care coming through the CCAC, people actually being able to buy their own care, and I think that direct funding model is something that we need to look at, and we need to see if that would make it easier for people to manage and have the kind of care that they want. And because I, you know, my mom is 89 and my dad is 91, and I know that these are really challenging situations, and there's not a simple answer here because different families have different needs. And so I think that what we're trying to do is put some choices in place so that people can customize the care that they need, that they want.
I'm very curious about the reorganization, because you added 80 new sublins. So how many people have been hired for this? How much has been spent? And why is there so much focus on administration rather than frontline care?
Well, you'll have to get you to do an interview with the Minister of Health to get chapter and verse in terms of all the personnel and so on. But I can tell you that the principle behind what we're doing is to make sure that as care is delivered, it's got as much local flavor as possible, because it's not possible from Queen's Park or even from a very large organization like the Local Health Integration Network to make the best decisions for local communities. So that's why we're trying to boil down those areas and make sure that the decisions are made locally. And actually, in the long run, I think that you'll see that there will actually be savings in terms of administration, because we're changing the whole CCAC structure and streamlining it in the local communities.
Okay, well, we have to see how many people are being brought in. You mentioned PharmaCare as a big big accomplishment. A lot of the experts in the field sort of criticize you for focusing on the young people, many of whom are covered, because it's people in their 50s and 60s who are most at risk of not being able to pay for their medication.
Well, I think if you talk to a young parent, though, Libby, with three or four, or as one of my constituents, five kids, if they all get sick in the winter, or if one of them has a chronic illness, that's pretty debilitating for a family. And of course, I would love for us to have a national pharmacare plan. You know, I think that there's a real gap in the Medicare system, but we need a federal partner to go there. We need that partnership. My contention is that we need to get started. That we need to take this step. It's the biggest expansion of Medicare in a generation, and getting kids off to a good start is actually it's better for them, and it's better for our society overall to have kids get what they need early on so that they can grow up healthy.
And are you committing to push for national pharmacare?
We've already been doing that. So our Minister of Health has raised it for a couple of years and worked with federal, with the other provincial health ministers, and I raised it at the last, I've raised it at the last two meetings of my colleague premiers, and we actually... You know, we actually got it into the agenda to talk about it. So yes, it is very important to me that we push this across the country. And you know, there's a pretty strong consensus among the medical profession that pharmacare would be a great benefit to people in Canada.
Okay, turning to hydro, you always bring up your grandchildren and the next generation when you explain some of the decisions that you've made in terms of green energy. But the way that you fulfilled your promise to cut hydro bills, it's putting huge costs onto the next generation. $4 billion in extra interest costs alone, according to the Auditor General, and even more, $4.5 billion, according to the Financial Accountability Office. Why is that the right way to go?
Well, the only reason I talk about my grandchildren, Libby, is that they're living with their parents right now, and their parents are having to bear the costs of basically government after government neglecting the electricity system. And that's a nonpartisan comment, because all parties have been complicit in that, and we've had to build the system up. You know, it was there were brownouts and blackouts in 2003 under my predecessor, and so it's really not fair for this generation, so you know, the people who are bringing up kids today to be struggling with electricity prices, nor is it fair for seniors to be struggling with electricity prices when there's an asset that's been built that's going to last for a generation or more. So all we're doing is spreading the cost out over that 30-year period. And, you know, yes, I was quite upfront that there's a cost associated with that. And in the same way that there's a cost associated with a mortgage. And the only reason I bring up my grandkids is that I can explain to them that for mommy and daddy to be able to do the things that they want to do with you today, you're going to need to pay a little bit later.
What do you say to people who say simply that it's time for a change in the next election?
Well, I say to them, you know, they will make that decision when it comes time for the election. But I also will say to them that they're seeing change. I mean, we've been changing policies and investments and the way Ontario works for a number of years. I've only been the premier since 2013, but as I said, there's going to be big change even as soon as this January. When I came into office, I ran on retirement security and worked with seniors advocates even, who were arguing that the Canada Pension Plan needed to be enhanced. So there's been change every year of our mandate. We've been a very active government, and that change will continue right up to the election, and then people will make their decision.
Last year, a lot of people were counting you out. Your popularity hit a low at 12%. You're up to 20. Toronto Star is declaring your political resurrection. How do you feel about where you're at?
Well, I've always said that the polls come and go, Libby, so I don't live or die by polls. I live or die by the work that we're doing, you know, and building a fair province. I got into politics because I believe that government exists to do the things that we can't do by ourselves. And essentially, that is about leveling the playing field, because people come in and live with different advantages. And I think government's role is to level the playing field to the greatest degree possible. So that's what better retirement security is about. That's what free tuition for low-income students is about. And that's what free prescription medication is about. So we're going to continue to do that work. The polls will be what they will be. And you know, really the only poll that counts is the one on election day.
Okay. Thank you so much. And Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Thanks. I hope everyone has a great holiday.
Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. So how did she do? Is it enough for her to get your vote again? The numbers to call, 416-360-0740, toll-free 1-866-740-4740. And right now, let us go first to Bob Richardson. Hi, Bob.
Hi, how are you, Libby?
Fine, how are you?
I am good, thank you.
And how did Kathleen do in that?
Look, she always does well. She's, look, whether you like her or dislike her, this is a person who is smart, she's hardworking. You know, there's a number of positives that she can look at from her government's perspective, whether it's economic growth, whether it's jobs. You know, take a place like Brantford in Ontario. It's got the lowest unemployment it's probably had in a generation. You know, they're doing the right things on infrastructure, a variety of things. That being said, she's also got a number of things that, you know, are tough for her. The Liberals have been in for 15 years. There is a sense that perhaps there should be some renewal. She's got to fight that and figure out how to do that. There's also a sense from some people that there's been too much too fast when it comes to the economy, whether it's minimum wage or labor changes or a variety of other things. So, you know, she's got a clear record, and people are going to have an opportunity to vote on her in, I guess, 5 months or so. But she's got a number of things that she can point to that she's done well, and she's got a few landmines and pitfalls she's going to have to watch out for, too, as well.
She said she didn't know what the ballot question would be. There are a lot of people who think the ballot question will be, can you trust the Liberal government? I mean, there really have been a lot of money wasted on a few files.
You know, I think the ballot question will likely be when you've been in office, and I'm not a soothsayer, but if you take a look back on long periods of government, usually the ballot question is, the performance of the existing government. Do you think they've done a good job, or you think you've done a bad job? When a party's been in for 10 or 15 years, and obviously the Ontario Liberals fit that description. So they're going to have to run really hard and remind people of a number of things that they've done well and see if that's enough to have people say, geez, I don't want to take a chance on the other guys. Or if they don't run well, you know, we'll likely see, you know, a fairly major swing and a new government at Queen's Park.
Okay. And who do you think the bigger threat is at this point? There's Andrea Horvath. She is currently the most popular and most trusted leader. And a lot of the popular Liberal policies actually come from her. And there's Patrick Brown, progressive conservative. He's released a platform that's pretty red Tory, by the way I read it. What do you think?
Well, you know, obviously Patrick Brown at the moment, I think is the biggest threat, although he's a little unproven. You know, he had a pretty light job in Ottawa as a backbencher for 9 years. I will say, I think he's done a good job as leader of the opposition. I'm a former chief of staff to a leader of the opposition, so I know how crappy the job is. And I think he's done a relatively good job raising money, keeping his caucus together, attracting good candidates, broadening the base of the party, doing all the things that you need to do, you know, in order to be competitive. If you're going to be competitive in the next election. Andrea Horvath is likable. She's experienced. She's going to swing for the fences a bit this time. This is her last kick at the can. She's had a number of elections she's been through, and unless there's significant improvement, her party will be looking for somebody new as leader. So I wouldn't write her off either. But at this point, Patrick Brown seems to have a little bit of momentum from an opposition perspective, really attracted some good candidates, raised money, traveling the province, doing the type of things you need to do if you're going to win an election.
Okay, Bob, I know your time is limited. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Libby.
Okay, and we're going to take a couple of calls, and we're also bringing in Patrick Gossage. Hi, Patrick.
Hi, how are you?
Fine, how are you?
Great.
Okay.
Interesting and good interview, Libby. That was a good interview.
Oh, well, thanks. So we know I did okay, but let's hear from a couple of our callers. Doug okay. in Toronto. Hi, Doug.
Hello. I think she really did a very good job, as did you. I've met Patrick Brown 3 times now, and the guy's never able to look me in the eye. Always kind of looks over my shoulder like he's expecting somebody more important to come along. And his promises, he flips around pretty good. And I, when he had his last convention and he put that big blank check sort of thing up on the wall and signed it and promised to resign if it doesn't work, that's hokey, tacky, and I don't believe it. And the more I listen to Wynne, the more I believe she doesn't sound just like another politician. She really does sound like she cares. And you wonder about trust and about botching various departments. The bureaucracy that exists in all levels of government, whether it's municipal, provincial, or federal, there's always bureaucrats who bungle things. And, of course, we go after the party that's in power. But looking at Ontario right now, we've got great employment. We've got good economy. Our business is working. Our health care is as good as any country I've ever visited. So I would say she sounds like she's coming back.
Okay. Thanks for that, Doug. Patrick, do you think that she is on the road back?
Well, I mean, I think she's got what it takes, and I think she's got the right approach to appeal to urban voters particularly, you know, which she needs badly. I mean, I think her focus, and you pointed it out, on young people is not misplaced. I mean, young people are voting again, thank God. And
not as much as older people vote, not by a long shot.
I know. Well, you caught her out on that, too. But, I'm feeling quite good about her. The only thing I'd say is that, and she's been doing these town halls, which have been apparently quite confrontational, but she survived them. And I've got a lot of time for people that stand up in front of a unselected crowd and just defend themselves when, you know, a lot of people don't like her. And she found that out in these town halls. And good for her, you know. I mean, that's quite something. So, you know, I've got a lot of time for her, and I like Bob's comments. You know, she's going to run on her record, and she's got lots to talk about. Patrick Brown, I don't see as a huge challenge, although his platform, he can run on that endlessly. And, you know, the blank check, I agree with your caller, is a bit hokey, but the platform itself is full of quite interesting things if he can keep all those promises, and I'm not sure that he can keep even a half of them. So, you know, I think she's on a bit of a comeback trail, I would say.
Okay, Patrick, hang on. Let's take a couple of calls. Deborah in Georgetown. Hi, Deborah.
Hi, how are you today, Libby?
Fine, how are you?
Pretty good. First, disappointed she couldn't be there in person.
Okay, we were disappointed too, yeah. But hey, maybe another time.
Yep. I'm just disappointed that after 14 years, she keeps going back to the previous government. You have to give that up after a while. It's not washing. My brothers.
They all do that.
Yeah. I know. And I wish any party stopped that. But after 14 years, it's a little long. My brother's a nurse, can't get a full-time job. Hospital's the worst. Hospital, everything was delisted, eye care, et cetera. I don't see how our medical is better. We used to get eye care. Now we have to pay for it if you're over a certain age. We're going into debt, massive debt. Like you said, her grandchildren and her grandchildren's grandchildren will be paying for what she's done. And I can't believe her ratings are actually going up.
Let me just clarify. One of those things is that the biggest issue that the Auditor General had is that they don't want to add those extra costs to the deficit.
Yeah.
So they want to hide the costs, or they want to put it elsewhere. It's an accounting question, yeah. but
the thing is, Libby, we're not stupid out here. We really aren't.
You don't have to tell me that.
And that's all I wanted to say. Those of us, we're tired of her. I don't care if Kermit the Frog gets in right now.
Okay. Okay, Deborah, I think we have some better choices than Kermit. Thanks for that.
Libby, for doing your show.
Thank you.
Merry Christmas. Bye.
Bye. So, Patrick, do you think that ultimately the ballot question will be, do you trust the Liberals and is it time for a change?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, trust is very, very hard to build and easy to disperse, you know, easy to lose. And whether she's lost it entirely, I really don't know. I think she's lost some, that's for sure. And it's going to be really a uphill battle for her to continue to rebuild trust in just in terms of what she's doing. I mean, it's a very activist government. It's very progressive. The progressive government in Ottawa seems to be holding on to its lead pretty well. I mean, it's real liberalism. So it really is a contest to see if you can reposition liberalism as something that's really attractive through her. And I think she's going to work hard at it, and we'll see what happens on ballot day, you know?
Okay, let's hear from Joyce in Scarborough. Hello, Joyce.
Hi. I just want to say, after McGuinty, and then what she has done, like I'm a senior, and the services for seniors health-wise have been cut, like physio, they were cut. And I needed that, and I've had to pay for it myself. I support a 40-year-old because she can't get a job. And if you go out into the workplace, all these kinds of conferences and stuff, there's no jobs for the 25 up to 40s. There's no jobs. So guess what? I'm never voting Liberal again in my lifetime.
I hear you. Thanks for sharing that with us.
I just think what McGuinty put us through and all the falsehoods that, you know, the gas thing that was never looked at, investigated because she got a majority. And like, I'm a quandary who to vote for later next year. But, you know, the Liberals, in my opinion, have put Ontario into such a bad situation, and the promises, like the lady said, I was shocked, absolutely shocked when she won a majority. I thought minority, and I thought, can the Ontarians be that stupid?
Well. She's a comeback queen. Joyce, thanks so much for your call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
So, Patrick, I guess people who don't like her a lot.
Yeah, no, that's true. And whether I don't think, you know, that lady, I mean, I sympathize with her. And
absolutely.
She's not going to change, that's for sure. And, you know, the whole issue of how people my age, and I'm fairly old, and you know, all my friends are being looked after, is a huge issue. As is employment for youth. I mean, I think we sometimes expect government to do everything and quickly, and you know, it's very hard. It's like moving a huge stone up a hill. But the legacy is that bad, I mean, people like your caller aren't going to change, that's for sure, and aren't going to be persuaded by all the good things she's done. And you know, whether she can fix the home care thing, and she kind of promised she would, didn't she? That would be an amazing thing if she could actually allow people to get money that they could spend themselves on their own home care. That would be a huge revolution.
Well,
I'll really wait for that one, Libby. Good for you getting it out of her.
Well, they talked about that, but you know, again, Patrick, I don't know what's going on with home care because people call in and they tell me I'm supposed to get 4 hours. somebody came, you know, a day late and gave me 2 hours.
Oh, I know. So, the system, I mean, that system is a mess, that's for sure. And I think the idea of just giving people money and letting them spend it the way they want is a brilliant idea. And we'll see in the budget if that's part of it. If it is, that might even answer some of the questions that your caller had.
But again, how much money when you're paying it for yourself? And I can tell you I have, and it was 10 years ago. It's on the order. It was 10 years ago. Patrick, are you there?
Yeah.
Okay. 10 years ago, it was $25 an hour. So I don't know how much the government can give people, but it's not going to add up to very much, I wouldn't think.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I think that's the other thing is the pharmacare, which hits old people that don't have any ongoing medical plan.
It doesn't hit old people, but it hits.
No, I know.
People,
but I mean, she's really pushing
people.
The federal government, and you know, I wouldn't be surprised if we see a pharmacare before the next election. It's something that has to be done, in my view.
I mean, absolutely agree with that, but again, the way she's chosen to start is contrary to
what... It's a bit odd, to be honest with you. I agree with you.
Yeah, it's contrary to what all the experts say should be done.
I can't believe the number of pills my wife takes, and you know, luckily we have a medical plan. So if we didn't have it, I mean, it would break us, you know.
Yeah, it's very difficult. Before we move along, Patrick, so what conclusion do you draw from this about the chances of Liberal re-election?
Well, I'm still a bit optimistic as a Liberal that she can pull it off. I mean, the debate is going to be horrific, I think. And she's a great debater and she's a great campaigner, and campaigns count, as you well know, and also candidates count more than ever. And if she has the right candidates and if she can pull it off in the debate, I'm not sure how. I think she'll do very well in the debate. And that's often when people say, you know what, this woman's okay. She's got my interest at heart. She's the other people are faltering and don't know what they're talking about. And, campaigns are really, really important. And she's already started, you know, traveling around doing these town halls and so on. Now, whether people will get used to her and whether they'll start to like her again, that's a psychological thing that I can't predict. But certainly the woman that just called isn't going to change her mind. So good luck, Kathleen.
Okay. Thanks for that, Patrick Gossage, former press secretary to the first Prime Minister Trudeau. And if we don't talk before, then Merry Christmas and Happy New Year.
Yeah, to you too, Libby. Thanks so much.
Okay. Bye-bye, and we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to discuss a very disturbing story, and that is hate mail at a number of synagogues across the country. What is going on? We'll be back with that. Before we go, the numbers to call, 416-360-0740, toll-free 1-866-740-4740, and we'll be right back.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.